I want to say that they made 12 episodes.
12 total. It's 12 total.
And had 34 staff.
Oh, my God. What? That's so many staff.
Guys, we made 12 episodes every 10 days. You know,
we've made 12 episodes in the last 3 days. Hello and welcome to episode number 510 of the podcast. I'm your host, Fox McCoy.
And I'm your other host, Jamie Golden.
The podcast is a show dedicated to delightful idiocy, and we're committed to educating you on the things that entertain but do not matter.
To find out more about these nuptialistic pursuits, check us out at knoxandjamie.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Podcast and on Twitter at Podcast Pod.
Thanks for joining us this week as we are going to be deep diving the movie The Wedding Singer.
But before we do that, you guys, 2023 is a magical year because, of course, A, the Barbie movie, and B, the podcast is celebrating 10 years of this delightful idiocy. Since that is a very special birthday, we're now entering our tween years. And what I know about tweens is that they love stuff. We have a very fun, time-sensitive birthday present you can buy for yourself, which is merch. This exclusive t-shirt, embroidered sweatshirt, enamel pin, and sticker pack will only be for pre-sale through Friday, July 7th. Take a gander at these really dope creations at knoxandjamie.com/live. Also, if you are a BFOTS, there's a 20% off coupon waiting for you in Patreon. Also, when we launched this collection last week, our team accidentally left out some sizes. So now both the t-shirt and the sweatshirt cover a multitude of bodies and preferences. Again, head over to knoxandjamie.com/live or click the link in the show notes to get your merch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes.
And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said,
what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Jamie, we are going to talk The Wedding Singer. I'm really excited for the people to listen to our conversation on The Wedding Singer. This was a former Cinema Side piece we did for a Patreon community. I remember this is one of my favorites, and I don't remember some of the nuts and bolts of our conversation, but I do remember watching it and being like, that held up. I'm glad that that held up.
No, 100%. I think we both really loved it. I think we both, I mean, obviously, I remember saying and believing in my heart that Adam Sandler, this is truly like one of his sweet spot movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a rom-com, but it has a lot of tenderness in it and a lot of vulnerability that he plays in a way that feels very familiar to my own way of playing.
That's
vulnerability,
right. Yeah.
And tenderness. And so, and I really, listen, just the fact that Glenn's last name is Guglia.
That's right. And she's going to be just, Julia Guglia, one of the best moments of the movie.
And
honestly,
of course, you know, Drew Barrymore is an American treasure. So, you know.
Oh, she's in it too. That. So just casually.
Stop it.
All right. So after you listen to our conversation on The Wedding Singer, stay tuned and you can hear our lights and the Amazon item of the week. And if you want to follow along, I watched this on HBO Max.
I did too as well.
We've talked about this in a couple different places.
Yeah.
For my money, if we were doing a streaming service draft, I think I would take HBO Max first.
Round one. Is
not,
that right?
Not even, but yeah, kind of. It is okay. A little bit. But not just because against the interface, but just because of the content.
Because it's truly, if I was doing a draft based solely on the way the platform works, they would be a final round.
It would be an undrafted
free agent. Thank you. Now they would have to redshirt onto the team.
Exactly. That's right.
Okay. So The Wedding Singer is a rom-com. It was directed by Frank Caracci. It was written by Tim Herlihy. The film stars Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore, and Christine Taylor, among others. It is set in the 1980s, 1985 to be specific. A heartbroken wedding singer named Robbie falls in love with a waitress / bride-to-be whose married name will, of course, leave her as Julia Guglia, which is the best. So would you like to guess this Rotten Tomato score?
Okay. The Rotten Tomato score, I'm going to say 71.
Oh my gosh, 69%.
Really?
So 69% is the critics, 80% is the audience score.
Okay.
So almost like a perfect, you almost nailed it. Now the critics' consensus was, it's decidedly uneven, I would disagree with that, and surprisingly sappy for an early Adam Sandler comedy, but The Wedding Singer is also sweet, funny, and beguiling. Now, interestingly enough, I looked up, fun fact about Rotten Tomatoes and Adam Sandler. Critics generally do not like Adam Sandler.
Fair.
And 13 of his movies have a rating lower than 10%.
Wow.
That's a lot of movies that are pretty bad. Yeah. Jack and Jill is maybe one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
But I think he's a good example of a volume shooter. You know?
No,
not all
exactly
the shots
right.
are going to be on the bullseye, but if you shoot enough, you'll get close and you'll make a lot of money.
You'll eventually get punch drunk love. So yeah. Like it works. Okay. So the budget for this film was $18 million. It made $123 million.
Jeez.
Dollars. Guys, that's a lot of money in 1980. That's a lot of money now.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money in 1998.
That's right.
Now here's my fun. This is the weirdest thing about when this movie came out. So this came out Valentine's weekend, which is a perfect time for this movie to come out. It opened number 2 for 4 weeks. Would you like to guess the movie that it could not overcome for that number 1 spot? Because the number 1 movie was the same movie for 4 weeks straight.
Shakespeare in Love?
Titanic.
Oh.
Right? Because Titanic came out that Christmas. Listen, Titanic was number 1 for 15 weeks.
Wow. That'll never happen again.
Listen, it was in the theaters from Christmas, which I saw it twice in the same weekend. I remember that. Because Titanic is the only movie. I've actually rarely seen a movie more than once in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably count on one hand. I know I could. But Titanic I saw 7 times in the theater. Because it was in the theaters until the end of May. Of the next year. That is unheard of.
Yeah.
So, but The Wedding Singer was in the top 10 for 6 weeks. And it was a wildly successful, even it's his highest rated comedy that he's ever made.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a nice combo for Titanic. You know, you got this big, sweet and scale movie, and then you have this really intimate, sweet. I know it was described as uneven and sappy. I didn't really find it uneven and sappy.
I did not find that at all.
I feel like it was very balanced, and I would, instead of sappy, I would say sweet. I would say it's a sweet movie.
I would say so as well. Yes.
Yeah. So this is, you alluded to, I think Frank Caracci, he speaks for himself. We all know his work. We're all well familiarized with what he's done. So I won't even go there with him. But I think, this is a conversation about Adam Sandler. And truly, when you look at this movie, I think he's coming off in 96. He's done Billy Madison and he's done Happy Gilmore. And obviously, he comes from starring on Saturday Night Live. He was fired pretty unceremoniously from that. And I believe the vibe was like he just wasn't really appealing to people. He wasn't like a commercially appealing persona, which is pretty ironic because he really became this very one of the most commercially appealing actors we have, whether that's through just inundation with his content or that he actually has that. I do not know. But he does Billy Madison in 95. He does Happy Gilmore in 96. And then, he does The Wedding Singer in 1998. And I really think the timing of that, I don't know if that was an intentional choice to do something not quite so broad and silly, but to do something with a little, humanity to it. I feel like that was such a genius move because I think it bought him so many more years of getting to do the broad comedy thing,
right,
where if he hadn't, we would have gotten tired. Cause I think we're at the point where we're a little more tired of it now. You know, Uncut Gems, I think he's been smart about like every now and then he'll do a funny people doing Uncut Gems and you're like, oh yeah, I think he's really talented. So then you tolerate some of the weirder stuff that he does.
You like tolerate grown-ups because you know you might get Funny People.
Yeah.
Judd Apatow. Like that's such a good movie.
That's right.
And he's so good in it. So yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think I always thought this was the movie that PTA saw and wanted to use him in Punch Drunk Love.
Has
but it's not, it's not
no?
the way. Actually, I've read interviews to find out what it was. It's Big Daddy. PTA sat in a theater and watched Big Daddy and reached out to Adam Sandler. Actually, through Tom Cruise, reached out to Adam Sandler And Tom Cruise called Adam Sandler and was like, my friend Paul is making a movie called Punch Drunk Love, and he would like to speak to you about it. Can I put him on the phone? And Adam Sandler was like, because I love Tom Cruise, I did it. And I thought it was just his weird friend Paul. And Tom Sanderson mentioned that Magnolia was coming out. He should check it out in the theater. So Adam Sandler watched it, and he said, I went late and I was on the front row, and it was a gigantic screen, and it was the most incredible movie I've ever seen. And I panicked, and I told him, I'm not going to do your movie because you're too good for me. But because of his work in Big Daddy, he decided to do Punch Drunk Love. But yeah, but I think I think as we go, we'll probably talk a little bit about this. This movie showcases I think this is a great showcase of his range. And I think in his worser, I don't know, compulsions, he navigates away from this. But I think the right story and the right director can bring out this really interesting humanity into him where, you know, when he got in with Netflix or maybe more recently with his friends, he seems like in the mode of, I don't take notes really anymore. I'm not really trying to punch this up. I'm just trying to make a movie. Whereas something like this, I feel like there's some real thoughtfulness in what he's doing.
Well, and I do think he made the mistake of, I obviously love him with Drew Barrymore because I love Drew Barrymore, but I also love 50 First Dates so much as a film. But I love them together, and I'm secretly sad that he's gone to Jennifer Aniston as that. And I don't think they have chemistry.
I don't know that Jennifer Aniston has chemistry with anybody, honestly.
No.
And maybe. I'm not saying that to ding her. I don't think she needs to have chemistry with anybody. But like, even I think the good girl with Jake Gyllenhaal, she doesn't have chemistry with him. It's a weird dynamic with her and people, and especially someone who looks like Adam Sandler. No offense, Adam Sandler. You know,
right. So for me, for who won the movie, it's a perfect segue into, I do think it is Adam Sandler for three reasons. One, I think he is sitting in his sweet spot. Like you said, he can show his range when he goes from sad to like screaming at people to really soft and quiet in that club scene. I just love that version of him. And I think he becomes someone where you go, maybe on paper, you might be like, is he sexy? But then when you see this version of him, you're like, oh no, I know why you would fall in love with him.
Yeah.
Like, and he's famously been married decades to the same woman. And you see it because it's almost like this is him. Like this is a version of him.
Yeah.
That you go, oh, I believe that this is who you are in real life.
I think he's probably the anti-Johnny Depp, where he does not need to disappear into character or makeup or roles or whatever. He just is always who he is.
Right.
You know? And I think he's my win as well. And it's for that same reason. And I think it's there's something about him, really in all his roles, but specifically in the ones that allow him to be emotional. And it's he's incredibly compelling. Because I don't think he's very insecure about his masculinity, you know? Like, I think he's very okay and open to, and almost, almost prepared to subvert expectations about being like a male heterosexual lead. And he's okay with being vulnerable, with being sensitive, with being deprecating in a way that is not, I think people can do that in a way that is ultimately self-serving, you know, trying to serve this larger unified theory about how they're actually like secretly a badass, but like they're just like nice to puppies because ultimately they want to get you to I am a badass.
Right.
But I think Adam Sandler is just okay with, he reminds me, when you were talking, I was thinking, is he the one that kind of like the primitive version of like BDE, you know, of just like a really quiet confidence. He is who he is. He's not really caring what you think about him, and like what you see is what you get, and he doesn't need to be seen as like this guy who is bigger or badder or funnier or taller or whatever. It's just like who he is.
No, I love that concept of him being the primordial BDE.
Which is strange to say out loud, to be honest with you.
I know, but you do see him as a precursor to Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Pete Davidson is a good actor, but like not classically.
Sure.
Not in the same way that I think actually weirdly Adam Sandler in the right part with the right script and the right director can do really great things. And that's my second reason of my three. The second is that this is such a weird, especially if you think about the height of rom-coms at this time, this is a male-led rom-com, which is so rare.
Yeah.
You sometimes get equal, like we're going to have, you know, You've Got Mail, or you're going to have Sleepless in Seattle, which is a rare, mostly male-led.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so rare to have that. And for him to do this, he said in an interview, he said, I wanted to make a romantic comedy that was heavy on the laughs. It was nice to do a movie that was pro-marriage and pro-love. You got guys who say they don't want to be in love, but those are usually guys who've been hurt before. And I like him showing that, like, love can be painful, and it's not just going to be me being mad. It's going to be me being really genuinely sad. And then my third reason is I do think he's a convincing wedding singer. Like,
I
truly
think so as well. You're right.
Because it's like wedding singers are not like, you don't go, man, how did they not end up on Broadway? Yeah. You're just like, oh yeah, they should absolutely be a wedding singer and they're great at it.
This is exactly where they should be. You know, they find their natural resting place. And I think you're right. And I think, you know, going back to what you said about Pete Davidson, I hadn't put them together necessarily, but I think both of them have a weird kind of off speedness to them, you know, which I think makes them very compelling to directors. And I think, you know, I remember when I, in high school, when we had this one team we would always play, and they would bring out this one pitcher who threw like 90 miles an hour for like six innings. And then they'd bring this other pitcher in who's like 60 miles an hour. And the difference of that is jarring, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Because you're just used to one speed and then you're getting a totally, and I feel like that's what Adam Sandler is you're used to Matthew McConaughey and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And then you're not getting that from him at all. And not even from the lead part. You're just not even getting that characterization. And I think it's not just like to put you on your heels. It's just actually like really refreshing. And it's like a really good story.
No, I love it.
Now, who lost a move for you?
Well, for me, it is every supporting actress minus Alexis Arquette.
Okay.
And Alexis Arquette is playing a male character.
Right.
But she's herself a woman.
Sure.
Or was a woman. But I think she's the only one that's doing anything interesting. Everybody else. And so it's not just the actresses in those roles, like the actress playing Linda, the actress playing Holly. It's also what they were given to do. It's just not interesting to me. And so I think it's a weak spot that I will later correct when we recast a role.
Oh, good.
But also Drew Barrymore, she is a 90s hairdo.
Yeah.
In an 80s movie. And it was, and I get that you want to be like, oh no, I'm laid back and cool. Yeah, you have a grunge hairdo and we are in a very indulgent 1985 movie. It does not fit.
Weird. Sure. Everyone else is going. There's a guy who's like straight up Flock of Seagulls at work.
Yes.
Okay. Like you got to match his energy, Drew.
That's exactly right.
And that, I think that's interesting because there's parts of this movie where I'm like, I don't know what she's doing. You know, like at the beginning, I'm like, she's almost speaking as if she's in Ever After to him.
Yes.
Like on the steps, I'm like, why are you doing that? But I think she rallies and like finds the rhythm pretty quickly. I'm going to say this, and this is, I feel like this is in a bad faith, but I wanted to leave space to talk about Glenn. So I'm going to say Glenn lost the movie, not because he's bad, because he's so perfect. He's so perfect at being the loser aspect of this movie. You know, you want to hate him. There is no part where you're like, actually, I identify with him a little bit. Actually, I'm rooting for him. He's the anti-James Marsden in The Notebook.
Yes.
From Jump Street, you just want him to die painfully. From the DeLorean, from like even the introduction where he's like, you can do that girl thing where you say you're happy and actually really sad. And like he's talking about the wedding. He's like, it's more important to you anyway. The 5 o'clock shadow beard at the engagement party.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the butts in the club. Like all, just everything is pitch perfect, and I loved his performance.
And you watch it, and you go, I know why Drew Barrymore is with him.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You don't question it. You go, I don't want you to be with him, but I get why you are because of the very things you just listed.
Yeah,
and you're like, I get why those are shiny, and it makes sense that someone so pretty would end up with someone handsome. Like that's a Miami Vice, you know, Don Johnson equate version.
He's a spiritual ancestor of Sack from Wedding Crashers, you know?
Oh, yes.
But just like less likable. But sometimes I like when movies try to humanize characters like that and you want to identify with them. Sometimes it's nice to go to a movie and to be like, oh, I hate this guy and I'm not ever going to be complicated about that. I actually hate Glenn the whole time. It's amazing.
Yes.
Really amazing. Low-key MVP for you in this movie.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you, my secret weak spot in movies is when kids curse.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my favorite thing. So Petey gets a low-key MVP for me. First of all, for saying, let's F some stuff up. And then for saying, Linda, you're a B.
Right,
and then being dressed as Freddy Krueger, like with no explanation and being like having the glove included.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. I love that. I do love that Glenn's last name is Guglia.
And to hold that until the club scene,
right?
Well into the third act is just that is a show of restraint. Well done.
It is. And of course, I would think I would be remiss if I did not mention how, of course, awesome the soundtrack is. It is stunning.
Yeah.
So.
I'll go lightning round really quick. I liked, the way the guy yells, you suck at George at the beginning of the movie. It's not just you suck. There's a vibrato and a depth to it. There's a hurt to it, probably a historical pain. It's really good. I like the use. It felt like in a lot of the wedding scenes, they use real extras, not just like hot off Broadway people who aren't working anymore. Like those are real people in life with like personalities and stories. I appreciate that. I like that Robert Smigel made it into it.
Yes.
He's the voice and the idea. I mean, he has like a whole storied history on late night TV, but he's Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, which is one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite characters of all time. He's the cook guy. I liked the John Lovitz Wedding Singer, the rivalry there.
Of course.
John Lovitz, I've never been a huge fan of him, but he's throwing straight heat. Steve Buscemi, the whole, the best man speech, self-taught no lessons. We still say that around our house. And then he says a woo and trips on the curb. Like,
really I love what good. He was like, we had prostitutes, but we didn't pay.
I really like what he's doing. I like Drew's white polka dot dress at one point. That's really good. I like the premise of the movie, and I like the use of weddings. I think weddings are always a movie cheat code. It allows you to bring atmosphere, purpose, exposition, context to the story, and it really utilizes that in a way that doesn't feel cheap. You know, it because you can siphon in a lot of different situations, a lot of different parties, bar mitzvahs, or whatever, and it allows you to see characters in a different way without it feeling like that's what.
And that's such a good point, because I didn't think about. I feel like this movie is universal in that sense.
Yeah.
Whereas something like How to Lose a Guy,
You're
like, well, I don't work at an advertising firm, and I also don't work at a magazine.
Yeah. Is Frost Yourself a good idea? I don't know. I don't work in marketing.
Could I wear that yellow dress? No, I could not. And so, but this feels like, I could be any number of players in this movie.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Best scene for you.
Oh, let me tell you. When Adam Sandler, after Linda dumps him at the altar.
Yes.
And he is singing Holiday. I played it twice. I rewound it and did it again. When he threatens to choke a man with his microphone wire.
Calmly.
Very calmly. When he fat shames the wedding guests.
Wow. Yeah.
When he tells a whole group of people they'll never find love and then does a cover of Love Stinks. It's the whole thing is pitch perfect.
It's really good. My favorite is I like the window seat callback. He explains he hasn't seen the Grand Canyon, and then we get that same scene with Drew and Glenn. But I think my favorite scene is it's really first 6 minutes, and it's the Jules Robbie meet cute, and I like it because it is not quippy and tidy and smooth. Like he does like a weird riff on the Hulk, she does this thing about like people need fish to drink. And both are like, I don't understand what you're doing. What are you saying? That's weird. And I thought that's actually very relatable versus like two super hot people and super eloquent people being super witty and basically like having sex with their wordplay. That's just not my life, you know, but watching them do it, that felt, I don't think that was improvised, but that felt very fluid.
Well, you know, it goes back to, you know, How to Lose a Guy. They have that. You're exactly right. They have that very sexy, like phrase trading in the bar where they meet and they're just back and forth, back, like you're hot. I'm hot.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so like, you're exactly right. That would never in a million years happen.
No,
but this where I mess up a metaphor,
right.
It, by a dumpster.
Yeah.
That is absolutely
I do that
happening.
On the daily, y'all. Like, so I love, and to be clear, I love both. I just like in this movie. I feel like it really fit the characters, you know? Does this movie pass the Bechdel test? Like it does not, but
guys,
who knows?
These tests are not going to go well for this movie. So, of course, the best Bechdel test was created by Alison Bechdel, which looks at how women are represented in film. It has three rules. The first, it has to have at least two named women in the film. Yes, there are 23 named characters in this cast list. 10 of them are women. So almost half. That's pretty good. Do two named women talk to each other? Yes, actually several times. Drew talks to her mom. She talks to Christine Taylor. Many times women chat. However, none of those pass the third rule, which is I am going to give it a pass. Do they talk about something besides a man? There is one conversation between Drew and her best friend, Holly and Julia, where Holly goes, how was your bottle of rum last night?
Okay.
Julia says, did I vomit on you?
Mm-hmm.
Holly says, a little on my shoe, but I was wearing your shoes. And Julia says, good.
Okay.
Now, it is all about a double date.
Yeah.
And her getting drunk on a double date. So I think in the spirit of the Bechdel test, it does not pass.
Right.
But technically, yes, it would pass for those four sentences.
Okay. Wow.
Which is sad.
By the skin of the teeth.
So, and then the Latif test, which looks at how people of color are represented on film. This was created by Layla and Nadia Latif. The first question is, are there two named characters of color? Guys, we can end it right there, because in 23 named characters, there's not one named character in the whole film. There is actually one speaking role of a person of color. That is the Justice of the Peace. but he has no name. And the irony of this movie is set in Ridgefield, New Jersey. Okay. Ridgefield, New Jersey is 36% non-white, which means one out of every three people you meet in Ridgefield are not white. More than one out of every three. So the fact that there are no people of color in this entire film is stupid. It is genuinely stupid.
I was trying to think before you started talking about it. I couldn't remember the Justice of the Peace. What scene was that? I don't even remember that. That doesn't even.
Oh, it's just one of the officiants. One of the officiants in the wedding.
Gotcha.
Just an officiant.
Well, because I was thinking even in the extras. I couldn't think of anyone. Nobody there, in like the service industry, at the airplanes.
Well, at Robbie's wedding, on the front row is a black couple.
You're right. You're exactly right. I do remember them now. Because I thought that's speak. Weird. Because they don't get to do anything.
They don't get to do anything. And, incredible. And again, I think it's so important for us to have these conversations because we're not talking about a movie that was made in the 30s. This isn't Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Which actually has actually has more representation in it, weirdly. But it's silly to have 23 named characters and none of them. And I get that obviously Adam Sandler works a lot with his friends.
Sure.
But like, you don't know anybody? Like, nobody can play this one little thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's silly. And I would argue there are a lot of actors that could have easily been replaced in this. There's some that you're like, you were the right person.
Yeah.
Like you said, for Glenn, that is the actor who had to play Glenn.
Right.
But like, for other people, there were tons of places where you could have put anybody.
Yeah. Again, this is one of those relics of representation just was not a big deal for people at this point. And you can definitely see it in the casting of this movie. The titular line test passed very quickly. Love to see it. Repeatedly.
Do you think this might be one of the most mentions of a title in a movie?
I think so. And it's genius in that respect.
It was stunning. Yeah.
I was really glad. I would like to submit, I would like to start doing the Save the Cat test as well. I'd like to add it to the battery of tests.
Okay, let's go.
Do you know what the Save the Cat idea is?
No, I want to know.
In the theory of screenwriting, I think Blake Snyder, he's like a father of, you know, modern screenwriting or whatever. But what he likes to say is every lead, your protagonist should have a Save the Cat moment in like the first 10 minutes of the movie. Okay. Huh. And what that means is he calls it something as simple as like literally saving a cat out of a tree. Like helping it come down. That lets you know this is a good person. Okay. So, like think of Aladdin. Aladdin, what's he do? He finally gets that bread, right?
Right.
He's going to eat it with Abu, but then he sees that kid who's starving and he gives the bread to the kid. Save the cat moment. Okay.
That's so really good.
We're going to see, does every movie have
a save the cat moment? Oh, I like that. I'm glad we're adding it.
Adam Sandler, Robbie Hart does because number one, he finesses the best man speech, smooths that over. So we know he's good at his job. He was the good guy. When his friend was like, Drew Barrymore was going to get it. I'm going to give it to her. Wasn't a creeper. He wasn't saying stuff like that.
Right.
He saved the puking kid, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And then this was post 10 minutes. This is like 12 minute mark, but he teaches a grandma how to play the piano for the price of meatballs. So we are just inundated with, this is a good person. You're going to enjoy rooting for him.
God, I've never thought of that in terms of, but you're so right. Like, you never think about how do we communicate to you like who to like and who not to like.
Yeah.
And I think we all can recognize how they communicate who you don't like, who the villain is or who the antagonist is. But you're right. You never get, I mean, you're always getting something telling you without telling you.
Yeah. And I think naturally when you're following someone, that's like, okay, I'm rooting for this person. But then you push it over by giving them a little, okay, they literally saved a cat or whatever. So we'll start tracking that and see how that goes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Olive & June. As a longtime user, like 6 years, and a huge fan of Olive & June, I still can't get over how easy and convenient their Manny systems are. Between hosting 2 podcasts, planning a live show, and our latest merch launch, I haven't had much time for like self-care and sitting around at a salon for hours. No time, but I do love having pretty nails, and it's during these busy, hectic times that I'm especially thankful for Olive & June. Their Manny and Petty systems come with everything you could possibly need to have salon-worthy nails genuinely at home whenever you want them, even if you only have 5 minutes. I love how Olive and June, they've created products for those of us with a lot on our plates who maybe are not great at doing their nails. Like, I don't have a ton of skill set. And look, they've made it easy. The number of times I've done my nails in a rush as I'm about to run out the door and then end up smudging them, it's super embarrassing. You'd think I'd learn by now, but no more. Olive and June's line of tab press-ons are a life hack I never want to live without. They're so easy to put on and come in different sizes, so you can always find the perfect fit for you. They look so real and they last like 10 or more days, and they're not damaging like gel. I love that I can order them as part of the Manny system with up to 4 different tab sets. It's the perfect time-saving prezi for myself. Visit oliveandjune.com/popcast for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/popcast for 20% off your first system. This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Aura Frames. I am super excited to share that this brand is not only Knox and Jamie approved, but more importantly, it's Chuck and Jan approved. Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected frames with unlimited storage, so you can share as many photos you want from your phone and they just magically appear on the frame. If Chuck and Jan aren't enough of an endorsement, it's also been named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter. It's such a fun gift for all ages. Do you know what my favorite part of the Aura frame is? I haven't been called over to Chuck and Jan's house even once for like Tech Sunday to like set it up, to fix it. It's truly the perfect set it and forget it gift in the best way possible. I was over to their house for Easter dinner. My niece sent all the adorable photos we had taken of my cutie patootie great nephews to Chuck and Jan's Aura frame. And it was so easy and seamless and fun to have the photos show up before we even left the house. Jan is the most difficult person to buy gifts for. And I was excited to see how much she loves her Aura frame because I immediately decided to get one for her bedside table for Mother's Day this year. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code podcast at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Has everyone's social calendar suddenly picked up, or is it just me? This is that magical time of the year when I can actually enjoy a patio lunch with Jan or just be outside for longer than 10 minutes without immediately regretting every life choice. You know what I mean? Since this beautiful weather only lasts about 5 days in Alabama, it's always tempting to cram in as many social gatherings as possible before I need to limit myself to indoor-only activities, and it can be easy to ignore my social battery and spread myself too thin. As an extrovert, I tend to thrive around people, and I always thought the more the merrier when it came to social commitments. Therapy has been super helpful in giving me the self-awareness I needed to build a social life that does not drain my battery. Being able to not only recognize my boundaries, but be able to enforce them has been so helpful in creating some balance in my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Since it's entirely online, the convenience truly cannot be beat, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Do you have any biggest reaches in
this? I have several. So the first is that they would practice the wedding kiss and that she would kiss Robbie. That is not going to happen.
Sure.
No one's going to be okay with it.
Yeah.
No friend is going to be like, hey, you should kiss him.
I don't know. A very sexually adventurous character like her, that feels like something she might do. But I agree with you. That was a little.
It was weird. Okay. Weird. And then Frank and Rosie, they're supposed to be celebrating their 50th anniversary. The picture on the wall says their wedding is 1948. So, and I get it. This movie was made in 1998. That's not where it's set.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's an easy miss. When Robbie tells Linda, get out of my Van Halen t-shirt before you jinx the band, and they break up. They had already broken up.
Oh, wow. By 85 they had?
Yeah, because this movie's in August. Remember, because she's getting married August 5th.
You're right.
And they broke up in April of that year.
Oh.
And then Julia's wedding date is set for August 5th, which she keeps saying is a Sunday. That August 5th, 1985 is a Monday.
Oh, guys, you can look that up.
Just look at my calendar. You guys, on the way to the airport, the scenery that you see in the background is the desert. We're in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Why is there desert?
I didn't realize it was so arid, but I'm glad to know that.
Thank you. Good to know. And then all of the exterior shots of the airplane flying, the landing gear is still out. I don't know why that is. And then my favorite, when flying to Vegas, Julia says, I want to see the lights of Vegas from the plane, right? Because she has to switch seats and all of that. It was a daylight flight. You're not And you're heading towards a earlier time zone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You're not gonna see the lights of Vegas on this plane. Okay.
Incredible, right. Incredible. Yeah. Let's see. I had the practice kiss. Beyond it being an unrealistic situation, it also was not a good kiss. It was not a game changer. There was no reason for music to happen. Drew Barrymore is doing all the work in that situation. Adam Sandler just has his mouth open like a dead fish, and I feel like she would have been underwhelmed by that.
Yes.
At the club, I've never been to like a bottle service club situation, but do they serve fries? Can you just like get an order of fries?
Oh, I'm sure you can. They're not going to let you just drink without eating, right?
But it feels like they would give you like steampunk artichokes that have been flash fried or something.
Oh, you do not. I don't think you want an artichoke or a, what's the thing that is always served that it's like, oh my gosh, they have roasted Brussels sprouts.
Oh, no.
You do not want a veggie when you're going to be making out with people. Of course, if you drink enough Belvedere, maybe you won't notice.
Yeah, you stop smelling stuff and like all
that's true. The
discretion goes out the window. But it feels like all the nice places that we've been to, like nowadays, that is like drinking centric, you know?
Yes.
It's always like, here's the cocktail menu, and then here are some terrible appetizers that are going to make you want to have a meal after this.
Here's a deconstructed fry that is just one fry that's open with a with seasoning in the middle of it.
That's right. No. That's right. Did you notice Jules was drinking a Heineken Tallboy?
What was
at
that
the table?
About?
What?
There's no way.
That's a rough drink. That's a hit or miss drink and a tall boy. I don't know about that, Jules. That was. She says rum later, so I don't know if she was mixing drinks or what.
I hope not.
Robbie's sister married to, I don't know what his name is. I just feel like that's what I'm going to recast here in a minute. But I just feel like that there's not a lot of chemistry there. You know?
Oh yeah. So Kate Hart is married.
And why is she doing like exotic dances for that guy? I just have a lot of questions about
no,
that relationship.
That's fair. That's fair.
Any favorite quotes from this movie?
Okay. Well, it goes back to the kiss. Cause I do love when they're like, you don't want porno tongue, you want church tongue. And I knew what that was.
Yeah.
Organically. Cause I watched The Bachelor, The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of porno tongue.
Yeah.
On that show. And yeah. I do like a church tongue moment. It is a good moment.
One of my older cousins got married. I think this was before Ashley and I were married, and she went with me, and we got porno tongue there.
No, at the wedding in a church. Were you in a church?
In a church, and Ashley gasped like it was odd. It was just like, like because we were just all a little stunned because we saw tongue extend and tongue enter.
No.
Yeah. So
you
I was
can't
like,
see the tongue enter and no, that's not church.
Yeah, you
tongue.
Can because we did, and it
oh,
happened.
Yikes.
My favorite quote was it is at the club. And Jules says, Glenn's in junk bonds. And he says, Jules, they're high yield. Do I tell people you're in junk waitressing? And the noise she makes, I don't know if that was improvised, but she's just like, it's so good. I love Drew Barrymore for that moment. Like, alone.
Oh, good, good.
Recast one role and why.
It is Christine Taylor.
Okay.
I'm going to lose her, the
wow,
best friend.
Really?
I know. And it's not that even that I don't like her, but I would like to put somebody. I just need somebody who's darker than
okay.
any of these blonde
So just
women.
A little diversity here.
I just want some diversity. And so I went and looked. This is how I do it. I go and look and see who is the same age as Christine Taylor
yeah.
who can be in this role. And I'm going to let you choose.
Okay.
I have four options for you. Okay. Renee Goldsberry, who I actually think is a great choice.
Oh, I like her a lot.
Okay. Jennifer Esposito, which remember Ooh. When Jennifer Esposito was everything?
Yeah, I like her too.
Okay. Jada Pinkett Smith.
Okay.
I like a saucy, like spicy. And then because Richfield, New Jersey, it's primary, like it's white and then it's Asian American. Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And so I am going to put a young Sandra Oh.
Okay.
I don't know that she's sexual enough for that.
No, she doesn't read initially sexual. I feel like Jennifer Esposito reads too sexual.
Okay.
So I would like to go with the original Angelica.
Okay.
Hamilton.
Renee Goldsberry it yeah. is. Yes. No, I think that's a
I
good
think
choice.
That's a great choice.
Okay, what about you?
So I'm going to recast, as I mentioned, I just feel like the sexual chemistry between Adam Sandler's sister and brother-in-law, it's just, he looks like, honestly, it was confusing because at first I was like, who is this woman to him? And then I realized it was a sister, but then her husband feels like their father. So it's just very confusing because I think he literally is 12 years older than her, like in real life.
Oh, no.
And there's no really good reason for that. He doesn't play like a pivotal part. He's not a name. He's not drawing anything. So I would like to instead, I thought, let's go, because I think this is, you see two of the guys, I cannot remember their names, but they're always in the Adam Sandler movies, you know, before Rob Schneider. It's these two dudes.
Oh, yes.
And I would like to we can go ahead and escalate him inviting his friends into these movie situations. So I would like to recast that role of his brother-in-law as either Phil Hartman or Chris Farley. Chris Farley probably is a little bit too of a wild card, and this would have been the last thing he did before he passed away. But I really like Phil Hartman.
Oh, I love Phil Hartman.
Yeah. I feel like he doesn't get enough run.
He plays a boring husband perfectly.
Yeah. Who's quietly sexualized, but in a way that is unsurprising, but kind of explainable.
No, that's a perfect casting.
Do you have any fun facts for this movie?
Okay. So some fun facts. We already said that this script was written by Tim Herlihy, but it was doctored. Which is very common in Hollywood. You pay writers to come in and they doctor a script. They don't get credit on it, but they punch it up. They add jokes. They don't really change the plot of the script, but they will add in some zingers. And the two people who doctored the script were Judd Apatow, one of his first script doctoring, and Carrie freaking Fisher.
I've heard she has a lot of script doctoring in her history.
She doctored Sister Act. And really? She doctored Last Action Hero.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Crazy? Okay, there are no sex scenes in this movie. And this is what Adam Sandler asked when he was asked by Conan O'Brien, why are there no sex scenes in this film? And he said, well, the main reason for not having a sex scene is I'm not good at sex. I started when I was pretty young and I was always like, you'll get better. And I got older and it's still not good. So I like that.
Amazing.
I know. And then Drew Barrymore famously was cast in this because she aggressively went after Adam Sandler. She told Howard Stern she wanted to work with Adam Sandler because, quote, I thought I want to be a modern, weird, Hepburn, Tracy, old Hollywood couple, and he felt like the perfect fit.
And I think she was dead on with that.
Okay. And then the woman, the rapping granny, who is fantastic, by the way, Ellen Albertini Dow, she was 84 when she did this role where she raps. She lived to be 101. I just thought that was a fun fact. And when they came to her and they said, we want you to rap, she was like, what's rap? And they were like, oh, we'll teach you. And she was like, I love music. I love to dance. And so when I'm practicing in the, in the rehearsal, they were like, oh, just do whatever you just did right then. Just repeat that.
Yeah.
Because she was so good at it. And so,
oh my God.
And then this movie is given credit for being a Friends guest star factory. Because obviously Christine Taylor, who plays Holly, she was Ross's girlfriend Bonnie on the sitcom. Remember, she's the one that shaved her head at the beach house.
Yes.
She is fantastic in that, by the way. And then the Julia's mom is played by Christina Pickles, who was famously Ross and Monica's mother, Judy Geller.
That's right.
And then John Lovitz obviously was on Friends. He was actually twice on Friends. He was a pot smoking restaurant owner who turns up high at Monica's apartment. And then he's a deadbeat with whom Rachel is set up on a blind date. And then finally, the girl who jilts Robbie at the altar, Linda, she was the woman from the copy store who Ross cheated on Rachel with during the infamous break.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that crazy? I didn't even recognize her. And then my final fun fact, this film was later adapted into a stage musical called The Wedding Singer. It debuted on Broadway in April 2006. It earned 5 Tony Award nominations and 8 Drama Desk Award nominations.
Good for them. Listen, I would love to see some kind of reboot or extended Wedding Singer universe where I feel like there's a lot of Anchorman possibilities of like rival wedding singers, or all the wedding singers are brought in like the Avengers to like beat somebody or something. The Steve Buscemi, John Lovitz, I just want the larger universe of wedding singers.
No, because
I was captivated by
and then suddenly like they're all suddenly there's some version of this where they're all competitors, but then they realize they're actually competing against a bigger enemy.
The Thanos
of wedding singers is of course
what if it's Billy Idol Jr. And he wants to get into the wedding singing game,
Oh, is it? I don't know. I don't know that I like Billy Idol.
Can we talk about the Billy Idol part of it? Because it's a big part. I'm a big fan of a person cameoing as themselves,
Yes.
I love that. I feel like he's really good in this.
Well, and he said, I didn't include this in the fun facts, but he did say the reason he did this, they approached him because they wanted an iconic 80s singer to be on the plane who could sing like in the moment
and didn't look like hot trash like by that point in life.
Exactly. That's a lot of calculus you have to get through. But he did it because his teenage son was such a huge fan of Adam Sandler.
Really?
So that's why he said yes, cuz he said I knew it would make my son think I was really cool.
Incredible. What a nice addition. Grade the movie, Jamie.
I'm going to give it I thought it was lovely. It taps into, of course, I'm the age where 80s nostalgia is just a delight. I love the soundtrack. I love the supporting cast. There are weaknesses, obviously, in it just from looking back. You know, and I don't try not to discredit it too much for that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it an 85. I liked watching it. I thought it was great. I did not get distracted while watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, I thought there were some dated moments of like, ooh, that's really mean.
There were a lot of mental health jokes that I felt like we had maybe too many, you know?
Yeah. And I know that's just, you know, unfortunately that was the climate of the times, and that's how we talked and thought about things critically. So I won't hold that too much against them, but, like we said at the top, I feel like you're kind of really delivered again, degree of difficulty. What are you trying to do? And how did you do at accomplishing that? I feel like it did a really good job. So yeah. I'm going to go 81%. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed the experience. So, hopefully listeners, either were able to watch it in advance or, will watch it after listening to this and they will, agree with us.
Have you ever heard a song on the radio and felt like it was written about you? That's why I'm so excited to share about our new sponsor, Songfinch. Songfinch lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. Whether your song is for Mother's Day, Father's Day, an upcoming graduation or wedding, or just to show a loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in a top Songfinch artist. I'm on their website right now, and I'm about to create my very first song. They've made it so easy. When you go to songfinch.com/podcast, all you have to do is click the big orange button that says start your song. In order to make the songs entirely original and personalized, they ask questions like, who are you creating this song for? And what's your inspiration? You get to pick the artist who creates the song for you, or you can have Songfinch help you by selecting between genres, vocal styles, vibe, and tempo. You can get as detailed and personalized as you like, but the process couldn't be easier for a songwriting novice like myself. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anytime, anywhere. Go to songfinch.com/podcast and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, our URL is songfinch.com/podcast. Don't forget to share your song with us too, songfinch.com/podcast.
With our live shows coming up in June, I've obviously started doing a little shopping. It's always so fun to look for live show outfits and accessories and go through my travel checklist to see what might need a refresh. I don't need much of an excuse to get myself a prezi, but one of the things I have on my list that I need to get before the new show is a new sun top from Pear Eyewear. Wearing my Pear Eyewear eyeglasses on travel days is probably one of my favorite life hacks, especially if you have an early morning flight. Who wants to wake up and have to deal with contacts before you have to get on a plane? Throwing on my glasses and then adding the sun top when I need them is just so much more convenient. I think the brushed rose sun top might be the perfect one to add to my collection. Pear sun top frames start at just $30 and the prescription glasses start at only $60. Don't forget that you can save even more by using pre-tax FSA and HSA dollars, and they always have free standard shipping and a flexible 30-day return policy. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code POP for 15% off your first pair. And support the show by mentioning that the podcast sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code POP.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
All right, Jamie. It's so weird coming into like the lights cold, because I'm always like, do I tell her or do I ask her if she about the lights?
Do like, you really what, wonder what about it? Like, what is it a... You can tell
it's
me.
It's all rhythm based, because as soon as I'm done with the episode, I'm like, I know exactly what I'm going into now. But if I'm just dropped into it, I'm like, Jamie, it's time to do some lights. But that's not it. It's a question.
Okay.
It's so unmooring.
Me.
Okay.
I want to answer your question. So go ahead.
Of course. All right. All right, Jamie, you want to do some lights?
Let's do some lights. lights.
What is your red light this week?
Okay, look, it's time. I know I've gone on the record before about being pet-pocalypse friendly. Mm-hmm. If you don't remember, I do believe that pets are just not what the Lord Josh Christ has for me. Right. However, if you own pets and love them, I will not yuck your yum. You have Luna and Bruce, and you love them, and I want to love them, okay? However, yeah. I want to finally address the seasonal elephant in the room, which is your dog inside the restaurant that I'm also at, okay?
Ooh.
Okay, big fur baby parent energy, I feel like, has convinced restaurants that they must allow all your dogs to sit at your foretop while you eat wings and drink happy hour Long Island iced teas. And please let me be clear, I'm only talking about unemployed dogs, okay? If your dog has a job and a vest and a tag that's talking about supporting you emotionally or in any other way, absolutely your dog should be there.
Okay. Can I just push back on you, though?
Oh, are you going to come for the people who have emotional support dogs?
No,
let's go.
I'm
let's
not.
Have it.
I'm not. I'm just saying some of you are lying, okay? And that's okay. Some of you need them. Got it. Some of you are dirty liars.
Some of you are dirty liars. Because I do watch the TikToks where literally the dog comes up and knows its owner's blood sugar is dropping.
Perfect.
And I
Great.
Love that. You
love
need to
that.
Be in that Chili's with me, okay?
Yeah.
But your puggle has to stay on the patio, okay? We've allowed this chaos for too long. Red light to your stay-at-home labradoodle sniffing my ankles inside of Applebee's, okay? I'm not having it anymore. You're not bringing that dog in here. Why is that 7-foot dog in there while I'm trying to get my baby back wings? You know
what
I'm
okay
mean?
If a Great Dane's just rolling around. I do love Great Danes. One of my favorite memories from high school is we had like dogs who lived on campus. They would just rove in and out of classrooms, and I love that. But I think maybe we could solve this. Like, I remember, you know, I'm still, I guess, old enough where we had smoking sections in our O'Charlies, you know, and I don't know what they've done, but why don't we have like a pet section? And the hostess will be like, would you like to dine in the pet section or in the regular section? And then you get to choose, and you don't have to like interact with these animals that you didn't ask to interact with.
See, but here's the problem. The pet section, in terms of the health department, needs to be as far away from the kitchen as possible. But
That's
also,
fair.
But I also don't want to sit by the kitchen door just because I didn't bring a dog into this place. You just don't need, again, patio. Yeah. Not
Listen,
inside.
I love dogs just like I love dogs. I love pets. I love animals. But like there need to be boundaries. Okay. I don't want to I want to leave them home and I want to go have a meal. I don't want like it doesn't always have to be together with everybody. It's insane.
Right. That's right. Okay. What's your red light?
My red light is Prince Harry and Meghan. Just because.
Just as people?
kind of, I guess. But just I fly in from time to time. Only when they intersect with like my personal interests, which is very rare for them.
Right. Sure.
But, and I think we've talked about this before, but they're, I think what I've realized, I think in this moment, I'm realizing this, I'm going to talk this out loud. I'm realizing that I'm very protective and stingy about the podcasting space. And I feel like we've worked really hard to establish a foothold here. And I know so many other creators who have worked so hard to establish their footholds.
Yes.
So when these people, these fancy, famous, well-to-do, you know, monocle-wearing top hat celebrities come in and parachute, and they take more money than I'll ever probably see in my life, and they make 12 total episodes, which is what Archwell Audio did before Spotify and Archwell mutually agreed
that
to part ways.
That's an interesting thing, because one headline will be like, because the early headlines were like, Meghan and Harry have so decided not to renew their deal. And then it was like, Spotify was like, no, we didn't renew the deal. We didn't do it.
Well, you know, I wasn't on the inner circle of like how that happened, but just as a very small business owner, for me, if I'm paying someone $11 to $12 billion, and they give me 12 pieces of content that are not very monetizable, that's something I'm not going to want to renew. But kudos to Prince Harry and Meghan to be like, we were creatively constrained. That's why we didn't make more. it's absurd. And it's good on them for getting that money, because I would have taken that deal too. But it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, you know?
No, it does. And I think I want to say that they made 12 episodes.
12 total. It's 12 total.
And had 34 staff.
Oh, my God. What? That's so many staff.
Guys, we made 12 episodes every 10 days. You know,
we've made 12 episodes in the last 3 days. I feel like it, you know?
It does feel like it. My favorite part of the news cycle last week, because this past weekend was the Trooping of the Color, I would like you to guess, in the royal family and the firm, what would you think the Trooping of the Color is about?
I don't know what trooping of the color.
Trooping the color. It's a royal tradition. It goes back to the 17th century. What do you think trooping the color means?
Okay. Can I get a spelling of trooping?
Trooping is T-R-O-O-P-I-N-G. And color is, of course, C-O-L-O-U-R.
Oh, see, I would have, I was going Sarah Bessie style with trooping, and I was going to throw a U in there, and I was going to make it like something interesting, but you actually went the other way. I'm going to say like just parading like your sick family colors around, just everybody knows.
It's almost right. That's almost exactly right. Okay. It's actually how they celebrate the monarch's birthday, and it happens in June. They do not give an F when you were born, because it's going to happen in June, because King Charles, his birthday's in November. Like,
is this where all those dudes like passed out because they got so hot?
Yes, so they're they're practicing. Yeah, because it's so hot in Britain. That's why you shouldn't have the freaking thing in June, because it's 80 or it's 30 degrees Celsius.
No, don't do that. I'm never 30 degrees is cold, and that's always going to be cold to me.
But here's my best, my favorite thing. The headlines have been King Charles versus Meghan Markle. Suits drops on the day of Trooping the Color, because all the seasons of Suits are coming to Netflix on June 17th.
Can't wait. I can't wait to watch that. Unbelievable.
And let me be honest, I would rather watch Suits. And let me say this, I would never want to watch Suits, but I would rather watch Suits than watch King Charles on a horse anytime. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless he's going to fall off of it. That's the only time I'm interested. I don't want him to die. I just want him to fall off of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm equal opportunity. I want to see anybody fall off a horse and not die. That's funny. Sure. No, you know what I mean? Like, I would like, if I say I want to see King Charles get kicked in the balls, it's not anything personal about him. I just like, I enjoy seeing that. That's just a fun thing.
It's just a good time. It's just a good time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What is your green light this week?
Okay. So my green light is a book. Listen, if your summer is calling for a beach read with less sexual tension and more, did that elderly lady murder her whole family? Then I have the book for you. It is Riley Sager's new book, The Only One Left. Now, in this book, Riley Sager, you and I are both fans of him as a writer. Mm-hmm. He writes kind of horror, I would call it horror light. Mm-hmm. But sometimes he can get pretty gory. But horror light, thriller, like very tense. This story moves between two timelines. The first is 1929, where the entire Hope family was murdered in their main cliffside mansion, except for lone survivor 17-year-old Lenora. Now, did she do it? Maybe. Could the cops prove it? No, they could not. So then our second timeline finds us in 1983, where a home health nurse named Kit is replacing Lenora's previous nurse, who just disappeared in the night.
Mm. Okay.
Lenora, who is now bound to a wheelchair, but she's ready to talk about what happened to her family. Now, that's where Sager, this is where I love it. Sager amps up the tension because, Lenora's going to talk, but the problem is she has been rendered mute by a series of strokes, so she can only communicate via typewriter.
What?
Holy moly. Listen, there's even a rhyme, because it's kind of a Lizzie Borden-esque type book. And so there's even a rhyme in the book that he wrote of like, stabbed her father with a knife, took her mother's happy life. It wasn't me, Lenora said, but she's the only one not dead.
What? Why don't they give her an iPad? Why does it have to be a typewriter?
It's 1983, Knox.
Oh, 1983. Bro, I forgot about that. Okay.
I know. Here's the thing I love about Sager. Sager writes in a way that my ADHD surviving heart loves as a reader, which is a brutal breakneck pace. Things are happening constantly. This one was almost worthy of putting in the freezer when it got pretty intense. I was like, I gotta watch Parks and Rec. I can't. And it was excellent. So I think this is one of those books. If you like a little tension, you're just like, I want to feel a little like squeeze in the back, like the lower back of like, is someone trying to stab me? Then this book is for you.
Okay. I'm taking it to the on a trip coming up here in a couple days. So I'm excited to read that based off that review. My green light, I've got two green lights this week. First one, it's a green light, also dead light. It's across the Spider-Verse. Spider-Man: Across Spider-Verse. It's excellent. It's super well done. It's if you haven't seen the original, I would really recommend. You don't need to see the original. The original is just, I think it's one of those movies where it represents the inflection point of like, there's animation, there's superhero storytelling, and there's like all this really thoughtful creativity, and it's the infusion of all those things. This Across Spider-Verse, the second installment in what I'm assuming is going to be the trilogy, is just even more of that. It's Kent Powers, Justin K. Thompson, and Joaquin Dos Santos directed. It needed three directors. That tells you how difficult this movie was. It's visually stunning. Yeah. Like you can go watch, I don't know, like The Good Dinosaur or something, and it's just a dinosaur and like lightning bugs. And I like that movie. This is visually a very different situation happening. It's written by Lord Miller and Dave Callahan. And it is, I won't go down like the cast list, but it's starring every interesting actor or actress like working today. It's
all
so
of them.
Unbelievable.
All of them.
And the way they just navigate the storytelling. So my son and I had seen the original one, and I took my son and my girls last night. We had to get out of the house. Ashley had a book club party, so I took them to see that. The girls had not seen the original. No issue. They still kept up and loved it. We're super engaged with it. But it's just, man, like, it's hard in a podcast medium to convey how visually stunning and creative, outrageously creative this movie is, but it is unbelievable the way
they
do it.
I watched it, and I will say this. It is phenomenal. And I'm not an animation fan for the most part. And I'm really not even a like Spider-Man like fan.
Yeah. You know, I'm super not. Right. I really tend to not like it at all.
And listen, the number of Easter eggs in this film, I just kept going, what?
Yeah.
And then I saw Kent Powers on TikTok, and he was talking about there, and this isn't a spoiler, there's a scene that is Lego influenced.
Uh-huh, that's right.
And he said that when the first Spider-Verse came out, that someone on YouTube recreated the trailer from Legos. Huh. And so he reached out to them and he said, hey, this was so phenomenal. This is so great. We're actually thinking about doing something like this in the next film. Would you like to be part of it? He's like, okay, I'll ask my mom. 14 years old. 14 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And so that sequence is done by him. He did it. The 14-year-old
did that sequence.
That's
unbelievable. It was a fan favorite in our theater. So,
oh, I bet.
Really,
oh, it's
well
so
done.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the movie. The other one is a book. It is called Bad Summer People. This is by Emma Rosenblum. Again, I always like to read beach or summer centric books in the summer or when I'm at the beach. So this is one I read recently when we were in South Carolina. But this is one of those, it's kind of, it's again in the genre of wealthy dysfunction. But it follows two main characters. Well, it follows like a centrality of characters, almost like a group of people, who all, live in New York, but kind of belong to this Fire Island community where they summer and they play tennis and they cheat on their spouses and they drink a lot and they resent and regret things. Kids are there too, but there's a tennis pro who's super hot, but it's just every chapter is a different perspective. I do really love that format. This is not, you know, this is not Hemingway. But it's very, propulsive, breezy in the way that wealthy people being terrible can be sometimes, like when you're consuming that content. But I liked how it set up the rising action, the mystery of the book, and then how it kind of resolved it, in a way that, you know, didn't neatly tie up anything, but, asked some questions that made you, feel bad about yourself, but also recognize the truth, in them. So I highly recommend this one.
Well, I'm so excited you did that, because I put this in my TBR pile because it got a starred, Kirkus review.
Really?
And the reviewer said, if White Lotus was a book.
That's a great way. So everything I just said, forget it. And just,
sorry,
if White Lotus was a book. No, that's better. That's briefer and more clear. So that's the best way to, kind of explain it. So
I love that.
Really well done. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. And remember, anytime you do shopping on Amazon, make sure you go to amazon.com/shop/thepodcastfirst. Say you purchase, use our affiliate link. If you're item purchase using that link this week was, Jamie, this is a pregnancy pillow.
You know how me and Jason Waterfalls feel about pregnancy pillows.
See,
love them.
He had to explain this to me because I was casually listening to both of you, and I thought it was almost like a donut or a bagel, I call it like a chubby hula hoop, and then you just like descend into it and then sleep. And I was like, that just does not seem comfortable. But now, because whoever bought this, I got to see the visual. It's like an N. Where the pillow at the top and on the sides. That's amazing to me.
No, it is amazing, guys. It does not, you do not need to be pregnant to love a pregnancy pillow, okay? This pregnancy pillow has 1,300 global ratings, 4.4 stars. I will say I wanted to see, like, what? Do people like it? Do people not like it? So one reviewer, JSH2U, gave it 1 star, and the title of the review was Too Hot to Sleep, and then said, I had to return this. I kept waking up feeling like my head was surrounded by nuclear fuel rods.
What?
So hot. JSH, you got a medical condition.
I don't think the pillow did that.
The pillow did not do that to you. This pillow does not make... Guys, I do not want to sleep hot. I'm going through some things, and I do not want to sleep hot. I'm not going to sleep hot. I love my pregnancy pillow, so I highly recommend this. All right.
Yeah.
You guys, do not forget, do not miss out on our 10 years merch. It's not just live show. It's about 10 years of the podcast and a legacy. It's a beautiful embroidered. We picked out good sweatshirts. We were like, don't get those cheap ones that like pill. Get the good ones that are like soft. So we got a Bella Canvas t-shirt that you're going to die for. It's so good. So go to knoxandjamie.com/live. Get your merch. You have until July 7th. That is a hard deadline. There is no wiggle room. We actually got the wiggle room, and that is to July 7th. So that's when you have to order. I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Knox Coy. You can find me on the socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.